The others have disappeared. Everything is dark, and Skippy stumbles around for what seems like an age, bumping his way through witches, mutants, trolls, and terrorists, unable to make out anyone he knows. Every available inch of space has been covered with black cloth, decorated in turn with crescents, stars, mystical runes. Black balloons float overhead like lost souls. Ropey black webs drip from the eaves. Mutilated mannequins climb out of the walls. And over the DJ booth, where Wallace Willis, lead guitarist with Shadowfax, Seabrook College's number one rock band, is spinning the discs, a gap-toothed pumpkin exults as though presiding over the Bacchanal. When his eyes have adjusted to the darkness, Skippy finds he can identify most of the male half of the revelers. That Zeus over there, in cotton-wool beard and bathrobe, is Odysseus Antopopopoulos. The IRA man in camouflage gear and balaclava can only be Mirish the Valdraha. But some of them still defy him. That eerie Death, for instance, face lost beneath the hood of his robe, standing 6.5 feet tall at least. Who is he? And eerier still, the pink rabbit jitterbugging feverishly over beside Vincent Bailey and Hector O'Looney. And these girls, can they really be the same ones he sees every day? Queuing up in Texaco for cigarettes and phone credit? Have they secretly, all this time, been this? If it weren't for the worn-down lines of the basketball court underfoot, the only trace of the hall's previous incarnation, Skippy'd think he'd somehow wandered into the wrong place.
"Hello, Skippy,"
a sepulchral voice says.
"Happy holiday of the dead."
"Thanks, Jeff."
"Isn't this incredible?"
"It's pretty amazing."
"Would you like some fruit punch?"
"Okay." Elf follows Zombie to the table, where Jeeker's Prendergast is ladling punch from a huge vat prepared by Monstro, from the ends of various cans of fruit concentrate. Dennis is there too, with Ruprecht. The former has just suspended Jeeker's for his gay costume, 80s tennis ace Mats Wallander, and then expelled him for not ensuring there is booze in the punch. A moment later, Niall bursts onto them.
"Hey, everybody! Mario just got turned down by a girl!"
"I was not turned down, you faggot who is dressed as a woman!"
Mario snaps, arriving behind him.
"I told you, she's a diabetic, and she must go and take her insulin."
"I saw the whole thing,"
says Niall, with an unrepentant air of jubilation.
"Wipe out!"
"Keep laughing, Mr. Funny. And when this bitch comes back from taking her insulin, you are going to look pretty silly."
"Well, even if she doesn't,"
Jeff begins consolingly.
"She will."
"Yes, but even if she doesn't, there are plenty of other ladies here anyway."
"And most of them are drunk,"
Dennis adds.
"Fascinating,"
Ruprecht muses to Skippy.
"The whole thing seems to work on a similar principle to a super collider. You know, two streams of opposingly charged particles accelerated till they're just under the speed of light and then crashed into each other. Only here, alcohol, accentuated secondary sexual characteristics, and primitive rock and roll beats take the place of velocity."
Skippy has gone to replenish his punch. Ruprecht sighs quietly and looks at his watch. Patrick the Knowledge Noonan and Owen MC Sexecutioner Flynn pimp roll by, plastic Uzis tucked under their arms, the faint frisson of tension still detectable between them. The aftermath of a heated debate earlier today over who was going to come as Tupac, which debate Patrick won, meaning Owen is now waddling along in a fat suit, dressed as Biggie Smalls. The squalling riff from Cream's Layla blasts from the speakers. In the DJ booth, Wallace Willis nods to himself. Oh, yes. Flubber Cook, who has come in his supermarket shelf-stacking uniform, explains to a sexy nun that while it's part of his costume, the trolley is actually company property. So although he'd like to let her ride in it, he can't. Mr. Fallon, the history teacher, drifts along the periphery with his hands in his pockets and a melancholy air.
"I'd like to say a few words about bullying."
Dennis, in an authentic sheen of perspiration, is declaiming to anyone who listen.
Here at Seabrook, we simply will not tolerate bullying of a second-rate nature. Bullying must meet the same standards of excellence we expect everywhere else. If you need help with your bullying, please do not hesitate to speak to me or Father Green or Mrs. Timoney or Mr. Kilduff or...
And then, grabbing his arm, Jeff Sproke says,
Hey, Skippy, look! Isn't that your girlfriend over there? Skippy!
Skippy?
Hey, we're going to need a new Skippy over here.
It's just like in a film. The music dims to nothing. Voices fade out. Everything melts away, leaving only her. She is talking with her friends, dressed in a long white dress, a slender tiara woven into her dark hair. She seems to glow like she is lit from within, and even though he is looking right at her, Skippy can't believe how beautiful she is. He looks right at her, and he still can't believe it.
Hapa, hapa,
Mario says.
Like a steak on a barbecue, this bitch is smoking. It is lucky for you that you are first dibs, Joster. Otherwise, she would be the prime candidate for some of Mario's special sauce.
Keep an eye on him, Skip,
says Dennis.
Never trust an Italian. The Nazis did that, and look where it got them.
You're not going to throw up again, are you?
Ruprecht asks. I can't believe she's here, Skippy whispers dazedly.
Skippy, old pal.
Dennis claps a hand on his shoulder.
It doesn't make any difference whether she's here or not. As far as you're concerned, she's on the North Pole. She's on the moon.
What's the deal with her costume?
Niall wonders.
She looks sort of like one of the elves from Lord of the Rings.
Or the girl from Labyrinth.
You clowns! She's obviously Queen Amidala from Phantom Menace.
Oh, right. You mean in that scene in Phantom Menace, where she wears a tiara in her hair. The special magical scene that doesn't exist. That scene.
But Skippy doesn't think she looks like Queen Amidala, or the girl from Labyrinth, or anyone else. He has seen beautiful girls before, in films, on the internet, in pictures pinned to locker doors and dorm rooms. But the beauty this girl has is something bigger, something beyond, with infinitely more sides to it. It's like a mountain with an impossible shape that he keeps trying to climb and falling off, finding himself lying on his back in the snow.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Jeff announces, arriving back on the scene with Titch Fitzpatrick.
Frisbee Girl's true identity is about to be revealed.
Titch, in a red Formula One jumpsuit crowded with company logos, clearly has other fish to fry tonight. From every side, girls wave and pout and send him amorous gazes.
Where is she, then?
He says impatiently.
Over there.
Jeff points with a decomposing finger.
Near the DJ booth?
Titch presses his lips together, and rising onto his tiptoes, cranes his head over in the direction Jeff is pointing. Inside, Skippy squirms. Finding out her name. This is becoming real. Is that what he wants? He can't even tell. She is with three other girls. A G.I. Jane with sharp, intelligent features and bouncy curls. A scuba diver in a tight-fitting wetsuit. And an overweight girl in some kind of incredibly voluminous Victorian-type ball gown that keeps slipping down her shoulders. The four of them are huddled together, conferring. Frisbee Girl's eyes darting repeatedly from the dance floor to the door, like she's watching out for someone.
Laurie Wakeham, Janine Forrest, Shannon Fitzpatrick, Kellyanne Doheny.
Titch reels off the names in a bored voice.
I presume you're talking about Laurie Wakeham. She's the one in the white dress.
Laurie.
Who is she?
Jeff asks.
Laurie Wakeham. Did I not just say that?
No, I mean, you know, what's her story?
Titch shrugs.
Just your typical Fox Rock princess.
She going out with anybody?
Dunno.
Titch says indifferently.
I've seen her with people at LA Nights. I don't know if she's got a boyfriend. She acts a bit like no one's good enough for her.
Frigid.
Mario comments.
So, basically you're saying Skipford here is wasting his time, right, T-Dog?
Dennis interprets.
You're saying that Skippy fancying her is like some kind of slime or ooze fancying, you know, Giselle. It's like some sort of disgusting slime or algae seeping over to Giselle and telling her to get her coat.
That's not what he's saying.
Jeff objects.
He's just saying she acts like no one's good enough for her. But that's because she hasn't met Skippy yet.
What's so great about Skippy? No offense, Skippy.
Well, okay. He's a very good swimmer. And he's nearly finished Hopeland.
Actually,
Titch remembers.
I did see her with Carl a couple of times last week.
Instantly, as if it's been sucked into some awful vacuum, all conversation ceases.
Well, I saw them together in the mall,
Titch says obliviously.
And once outside Texaco. I don't know if they're going out. I can ask around if you want.
Good idea. You ask Carl, and if he comes over and smashes Skippy's face in, we'll know she's spoken for.
Just then, as though sensing the eyes on her, the fat girl in the unfortunate dress turns and squints in their direction. Next thing they know, Titch has bolted into the crowd.
Sorry, dude.
Niall commiserates. Skippy is gazing at the floor, as if counting the fragments of his shattered life.
I think you should go and talk to her anyway,
counsels Ruprecht.
You fat moron, didn't you hear what he said? He said he'd seen her with Carl. Carl is the key word there. It means get the hell out of the way or start digging your own grave.
He only said he'd seen her with Carl.
Ruprecht corrects him.
There could be any number of explanations for that.
Oh, sure. Maybe they're in Stamp Club together.
Let's just stop talking about it, Skippy says desolately.
But Carl,
Ruprecht says.
Why would anybody want to go out with Carl?
Because that's what girls do, you idiot. The more of an asshole a guy is, the more girls he's got lining up to give him blowjobs. That is a scientific fact.
You can't just say something is a scientific fact,
Ruprecht rejoins.
I just did, fat ass. And what do you know about it anyway? Who the hell ever gave you a blowjob?
Your mother.
Jeff prompts sotto voce.
Your mother.
Ruprecht says to Dennis.
Stepmother.
Dennis corrects sulkily.
Ruprecht has a point, though.
Niall says.
Like, is Carl even here?
Can we just stop talking about it? Skippy remonstrates.
No, but if they were together, he'd be here, wouldn't he?
It seems to me that the only way of establishing the truth is for Skippy to go and talk to this girl.
Ruprecht repeats. Would you all just fucking shut up? Skippy interjects. Just fucking shut up about it. Why can't you? Surprised, they fall silent and remain so a moment. Then Mario, with some remark about beavers, turns and plunges quixotically into the dance floor. Dennis and Niall follow after him, already chuckling. Ruprecht pats Skippy on the shoulder and directs another surreptitious glance at his watch. Skippy looks over at Laurie. The other two girls are both speaking to her. She nods without seeming to be listening, thumb jabbing frenetically at her phone. He wishes he'd never told anyone about her, never found out anything about her, that he could have gone on just watching her through the telescope. Now, just like Dennis said, even though she's right here, she's on the other side of the world.
Don't give up yet, Skippy.
Jeff's voice sounds in his ear.
Strange things happen at Halloween.
And at that very moment, in the middle of the twin lead guitar break in Hotel California, one of Wallace Willis's all-time favorite solos, the music cuts out, and the lights too. And in the interregnum of darkness, there is a fierce peal of thunder, like some huge, amorphous black animal snarling right over their heads. Everybody cheers. Skippy's hand tightens on his sword. Lightning flashes outside his window. In his imagination, Carl hears cheering and laughing. His, Morgan's, phone says 1949, which means 7:49. He is late. Liar Liar has been texting him all night. Are you going to hop? You should. It'll be fun. And we're going drinking before, behind church. You coming? The lightning goes again. Now he imagines the sports hall on fire, everybody inside screaming and burning. He was ready to go, At 19:20, he put on his coat and took the pills from behind the stereo. In the lonely church parking lot, he would make her beg for them. All her friends are gone. Tears are rolling down her cheeks. Sorry, the price has gone up. She has no choice. She turns over. Her belt clinks open. She pulls down her jeans. He fucks her right there on the rainy steps, while God peeps out through the stained glass window at him.